Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Coming up on DTNS, the word on the street about Google Stadia, the reviews are out. ByteDance set to take on Spotify and Apple Music, and you might want to track your sleep. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, November 18th, 2019. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Roger Chang, the show's producer.
Very happy to have Rob DeMillo, CTO at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill LLP, back with us. How's it going, Rob?
Very good. Thank you very much for inviting me.
I can't wait to talk sleep with you.
There's so many jokes there, but I'm gonna let them all go.
I know. That was rude because I just threw that up there, knowing that you would have
a little
the discretion not to, to run with it.
You should not know that.
I know. I shouldn't tempt you. We had a great time just now talking on Good Day Internet about pergolas and Redwood and all kinds of good stuff. If you want to find out that and more, of course, sign up for Good Day Internet at patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
ZDNet reports that some Disney Plus accounts have already been stolen or being offered for free or for sale on various forums. Some users have had their passwords changed, others didn't. ZDNet suspects that the users either reused passwords from other sites or had been infected with malware previously. Forums have been filled with account credentials for Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, and others for years. However, the speed at which accounts have been stolen is unusually fast. Mm-hmm.
Disney Plus showing how valuable it is by how fast they stole.
Kinda, yeah.
The messaging app Line and Yahoo Japan have jointly announced a basic agreement on a merger, aiming to finalize the agreement in December. The owners of the two companies, SoftBank and Naver, will form a joint holding company with a mutual 50% investment. Yahoo Japan and Line will become subsidiaries and investing 340 billion yen to take Line private. As part of the merger, the two companies plan to integrate their business by October 2020, after which it's expected to be Japan's largest internet company by revenue.
Zazu Africa Limited announced a partnership with MasterCard to issue prepaid cards linked to the Zazu Payments app. Zazu lets users in Zambia, send, receive, and pay and save money without needing a bank account. This is a trend. We've been seeing a lot of this. Zazu users will be able to get a contactless physical card as well as a virtual card in the Zazu app.
All right, let's talk a little more about the fate of John Legere.
Oh, let's. T-Mobile announced that the current COO, Mike Sievert, will succeed John Legere as CEO as of May 1st, 2020. Legere had been expected to step down after the completion of the Sprint-T-Mobile merger. Legere was also named CEO back in 2012. He's been there for a while. The Wall Street Journal and CNBC reported that WeWork, which is also a SoftBank investment, like Sprint, had talked to Legere about taking over as CEO at that company, according to sources. But Legere said on a conference call Monday, quote, "I was never having discussions to run WeWork." Legere hasn't given an indication of what he plans to do after stepping down as CEO. Meanwhile, Boost Mobile founder Peter Adderton, I know, it just keeps coming, told Reuters that he's willing to pay up to $2 billion to build the prepaid wireless brand back from Sprint. to buy it, rather. T-Mobile and Sprint agreed to sell Sprint's prepaid mobile networks, including Boost, to Dish Network for $1.4 billion as a condition of that merger. Don't forget, the whole Sprint-T-Mobile merger is still facing a lawsuit from U.S. Attorneys General. So the whole thing is rather in flux.
As the mobile companies turn.
Yeah,
no kidding.
Seriously.
So it's probably... So it sounds like Sprint and T-Mobile feel confident about the fact that they will be able to get past the Attorneys General lawsuit and that they will then close their merger next year, to the point that they just said, you know what, John's going to pick a date, May 1st. He'll be done as of May 1st. That also implies to me, Rob, and you tell me if I'm over-reading the tea leaves, that he does have something set up.
Oh, yeah.
That he's going to go to. We just don't know what it is yet, right?
There ain't no coincidences in this universe.
Yeah.
At all. Yeah. The rumors of him like going to WeWork coincident with him leaving T-Mobile and his background being a turnaround artist just sounds like that's what's going to happen.
Well, it all made too much sense until he said I was never having discussions to run WeWork. So that made me think, well, maybe we just
this is
wrong.
This is Laguerre you're talking about.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he'll say stuff like that.
I was never having discussions to run WeWork. I was having discussions about being CEO of WeWork.
Or I just decided and I didn't discuss it with them.
Yes.
Yeah. Now I am.
And now I am.
Meanwhile, because of the attorneys general, they haven't closed as fast as possible. So they missed a November 1st deadline. So technically the merger is in renegotiation, even though both parties are still totally fine with it. But because it's in renegotiation, Peter Adderton can then step up and go like, hey, I got $2 billion. I think I want Boost Mobile back after all, which is not an easy transaction because Dish agreed to get Boost and Virgin and some Spectrum. So even if Sprint were to say, okay, we'll give Boost back to Adderton because he's giving us more money, it could sink the rest of that deal with Dish because Dish may say, well, it's not worth it if we don't get Boost.
I forgot all about Dish. Did anyone know anything about Sievert?
Not much, no.
I don't know a thing about him.
I mean, COO, been there for a while, but largely kind of behind the scenes character. So
I bet he doesn't curse in his tweets. That's all.
That would be sad.
I know.
That would make me sad.
I can't wait to read those new WeWork tweets.
Well, it's sort of it's sort of like Tim Cook and Steve Jobs. You know, you can't act like the guy that everybody knew and loved, right?
I guess. Or
perhaps didn't love.
Yeah, or, that's fair.
You gotta do your own thing.
It's gonna be a new
era. You act like the cranky old uncle then? Is that the deal?
maybe. We'll see. We'll see what role Sievert wants to fill. Meanwhile, Roger just slacked me that Apple has announced a press event for December 2nd at 4 p.m. Eastern because they hate us and want to have a press event in the middle of our broadcast day here.
Rude.
4 p.m. Eastern, December 2nd in New York City, focused on honoring our favorite apps and games of 2019. So may not be like a product announcement thing. May not even be all that much, but interesting nonetheless, right?
I'll be in New York on December 2nd, so we can go tell them to just hold off for 30 minutes.
Well, maybe they can honor you. Do you have an app?
No.
Or a game?
No.
All right. The reviews for Google Stadia are out one day before it launches for founders on Tuesday, November 19th. And the consensus is, works better than expected, but still not quite good enough. There's some noticeable lag, which is not a problem in slow-paced games, but may or may not cause issues on shooters, just depending on how sensitive you are to it. Ars Technica's Kyle Orland said it worked fine on Ethernet for him, but was inconsistent to the point of aggravation on his Wi-Fi, anyway. Most said it kind of feels like a beta. The Verge's Sean Hollister said it felt more reliable than similar services he's tested, but does not compare to a high-end console or PC. And in Gadget's Jessica Condit said, I wouldn't play any of these titles competitively on Stadia, but the service is fine enough for a relaxing evening. If you don't remember, Google Stadia has now upped it. They added some games, so they're going to have 22 games at launch for $130 plus $10 a month plus $20 to $60 per game.
It's interesting, the whole sort of like, okay, it's not snappy enough for competitive gaming, but it's totally fine for a fun, relaxing evening. Who are the people who want one and not the other?
Yeah. It's a very good question. I mean, mobile gamers, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I would probably be one of those people who's like, I don't care about the snappiness necessarily if I've got like three games that I like and I want to play a lot. But I wonder what, who's going to be diverted from getting Google Stadia knowing, it's a little bit sluggish.
Well,
even if it doesn't actually apply to them.
It's kind of interesting because first of all, me, like I actually do game and that millisecond response time is important. But yeah. I don't know if you remember, but I was on when Stadia was announced and we had talked about it at one point and I'm like Joe streaming guy. Right, so I've been doing streaming for years, and I was amazed. The beta was amazing because there was just a few people on it, but I was amazed by the sort of overall let's just go out there and do it attitude of Stadia. It's like, because it's hard, like that stuff is hard, and user managing user complaints when users really don't understand like how streaming is affected by all the various bits and pieces between the server and your game controller. They're taking a huge gamble, and so is Microsoft, by the way, coming forward. So it's going to be kind of interesting. I mean, this is the same crowd that was like complaining about that the scenes in Game of Thrones being too dark. It's like, yeah, well,
I think to answer your question, Sarah, anybody who games on an older Xbox or PlayStation, especially if it's a PlayStation 3 or Xbox 360, which there still are some people, will be fine with this. I got a peek at it this weekend, and my feeling was, for me, it's fine. Like, I'm not a competitive gamer. I'm not really attuned to the lag. So those of you who are competitive or think, you know, you're competitive are going to notice it, but I imagine most people aren't. What's a bigger problem is what Ars Technica's Kyle Orland pointed out, and that's to your point, Rob, which is there's something in his Wi-Fi that caused issues that he didn't see in Ethernet. And a lot of people are going to say, hey, this doesn't work. It's your fault, right? Even though it may be their router setting or their equipment or something else on their own network slowing it down, because there are so many variables there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think eventually they're going to work this out. I mean, this is the same problem Netflix had. Very, very early on.
That's true.
Right? People work on stuttering and all this stuff. So getting those CDNs in place, and you know, they've got the buck to do it. So
moving on, Microsoft confirmed that it will remove the Cortana app from the iOS and Android app stores on January 31st in the UK, Australia, Germany, Mexico, China, Spain, Canada, and India. A Microsoft spokesperson told The Verge that currently the app is still supported in the US. However, Microsoft said it plans to further integrate Cortana into Office 365. We talked about that in the past. The company did not reveal how devices that use the Cortana app for configuration and firmware updates, like the Surface headphones, would work in those selected markets.
It should be easy enough to just build Cortana into the Surface headphone system. It's going to stay on Windows, first of all.
Microsoft has done a whole push into the fact that they're like, this is just going to be a Windows.
Yeah, Microsoft has said they just want it to be their voice assistant in software, like Office 365. So it doesn't shock me that it would take away the app, but they will have to migrate a few things like settings to other situations. That should easily be done. This honestly doesn't surprise me. It just shows that, you know, Microsoft is saying we are seeding that front end of the market, but we will still continue to use our voice recognition services as an enterprise service, which is where they make their money these days.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
I'm actually a little disappointed that I didn't use Cortana a little bit more on iOS before it got yanked, just because, you know, I like to sort of know how the assistants work. I still think that Google's assistant is way better than Siri. You know, Amazon's assistant is a whole other thing. But Cortana, I don't have a lot of experience with.
Hey. And go ahead.
Sorry. No. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wonder what the motivation really is to do. Like, is there a partnership somewhere in the works with Google and Microsoft or Amazon and Microsoft, and that's why there's
there is a partnership with Amazon already, and they'd like a partnership with Google. So yeah,
but for the voice assistant,
Cortana is integrated.
Oh,
with the,
there you go.
With
oh yeah, yeah, sure. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. So that might actually be part of the.
I'm sure that's part of the calculation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the end, hey, Cortana, we'll miss you. Logitech announced the Adaptive Gaming Kit, designed to work with the Xbox Adaptive Controller to make gaming more accessible to those with disabilities. The kit includes 3 small buttons, 3 large buttons, 4 light touch buttons, and 2 variable trigger controls that connect to the Adaptive Controller over 3.5mm jacks and USB, and can be mapped to different functions for Xbox and PC games. It also includes both rigid and foldable game mats with Velcro ties for laying out the buttons. The Adaptive Gaming Kit was developed in partnership with the Able Gamers Charity, the Abilities Research Center at Mount Sinai, and Special Effect, and costs $99.99. That's a big advancement for this, and Microsoft's been doing a lot in the accessibility space, so it's good to see them continue, especially in gaming, to make these available.
Yeah.
I don't know, Rob, what do you think of the price point?
That's about right. I mean, it's $99. I mean, a new controller is what, $60 or something? A non-adaptive controller. So $60, so $30 for the accessibility option. I mean, it's a unfortunate. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say that compared to the old adaptive or controllers that they used to create that were very specialized and very console specific. I mean, $100 is super cheap. Things used to be like $300. Back at the Xbox 360 days and before.
Well, this is just the gaming kit. Keep that in mind. It works with the Xbox Adaptive Controller, but you'll still need that controller separately to the $100.
Yeah, it's still kind of okay. I mean, it's a target market that's very small, right? And so you make up for that by you have to ratchet up the price, unfortunately. So all things considered, it's actually not bad.
Well, especially because the target market is small, a lot of times people who have accessibility needs just don't have an option, just don't have a product. So it's good to at least see that.
The Financial Times reports that ByteDance, perhaps you've heard of it, is in talks with Warner Music, Universal Music, and Sony Music to secure music streaming rights and plans to launch a music streaming service as early as next month. This is according to sources. Listeners would be able to search through a library of short vertical video clips designed for mobile phones and then sync these songs as they listen. The service would reportedly cost less than $10 per month and initially launch in Brazil, Indonesia, and India.
Yeah, we went round and round in the pre-show about this, like, because that vertical video clip thing seems like they're trying to take some of their TikTok product and force it in. It's filtered through sources. So my experience is a lot of time these things end up being a lot less weird when they actually become public than they sound when some source is kind of talking through the side of their mouth about it. But I think what is significant is that ByteDance, which has a huge and growing market with TikTok worldwide, can get those people to move over to a fairly affordable service in areas of the world where they can be competitive, like Brazil, Indonesia, and India.
Yeah, and you mentioned, when we were talking through this earlier, you know, I was like, this is going to be like TikTok video stuff. And you were like, no, that's not what this is. But that's, you know, immediately where my mind went to. And the fact that it would reportedly be less than $10 per month leads me to believe it would be a more restricted library. Because otherwise, why wouldn't you just, you know, have it at a competitive level? Because you have so many users anyway.
The markets they're launching in are markets where less than $10 a month is a kind of an average price.
Is the right place. Yeah. And Brazil, Indonesia, and India they're not doing that on accident.
The really cheap Netflix, you know, the mobile only version of Netflix is in India. That's one of the test markets it launched in, places like that. I do see if this starts taking off in places where they can maybe get a groundswell, ByteDance could become a player on the scene with Apple and Spotify.
I think it's easy for, I don't know, someone like me who's, you know, I'm Apple Music. Many people are Spotify or there are other options, obviously, but those are the two biggest players to be like, we've got enough. We have enough of these. But if somebody comes in at a lower price point and is just as good, who's going to move over or who's going to sign up for a ByteDance service who didn't with the others?
Yeah, my first reaction to this is that one. It's like, oh, thank God, another streaming service. Phew. That's great. Yeah. But then I woke up this morning and one of my VC channels that I subscribe to is chattering away with, they think this is directly putting Spotify in the crosshairs. Mm-hmm. Like it's a deliberate attempt to try and bring Spotify's market share down.
But I could see that, especially because Spotify is stronger in areas of the world that Apple Music hasn't really caught on in. So, yeah.
Yep.
Well, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Sleep trackers, a lot of them exist. They exist in a lot of different ways. There's standalone devices that do particular things, obviously part of your general wearable watch or fitness tracker. And they generally measure things like sleep duration, sleep quality, the phases of your sleep, environmental factors like light and temperature, even lifestyle items like when you last ate or how much caffeine you've been drinking. Alan Schwartz, MD, director of the Sleep Disorders Center at Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center, pointed out that none of them actually measure sleep directly. That would require brainwave monitoring, but infer sleep tracking from other data. But he says they can still give you data to reflect on as long as you realize the limits of what they can tell you, and they can still tell you a lot. Rob, I know you've been using sleep as an Android and an oximeter to track your sleep. What got you interested in this form of self-measurement, and what have you found out?
Self-centered interest, actually. So I snore quite a bit, and I started to notice the older that I got, I would start to wake up as tired as when I went to bed, mm-hmm. which was just not cool, by the way, just in general.
No, so sleep is that you wake up less tired. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So I was trying to figure out what was doing right. And so I started screwing around with all this stuff back in the Fitbit days, early Fitbit days. And so I'd, use their silly little, you've rolled over, or you haven't rolled over thing. And I could see that I wasn't restless. So that kind of led to more and more things, and I got on the trail of sleep as Android, which I don't think, Sarah and Tom, you tell me this. It doesn't exist on iOS, does it?
Nope.
Okay.
No.
Aside from having the world's most awkward name for an app, it became more and more complex as to what they could do with it, to the point now where it's like you can if your bed partner also has sleep as Android, they'll talk to each other, and when they're looking for snoring and things like that, they can figure out which one of you is doing it.
Like right now, like, I feel like you'd be like, it's you, because you're keeping me up.
Part of my problem is I think I think my dog is actually triggering my thing. But so
for the dog too. Yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly. So as the app has increased in power and phones have increased in sensors, it's doing more and more interesting things. So it's not just detecting snoring anymore. It's also looking for light level changes, pressure changes, vibrations, that sort of thing. And it was showing a clear pattern for me that there was problems with the way I was sleeping. And I've gotten to the point now where I'll sometimes wake up in the middle of the night jarred awake because I think I have gone into sort of this weird oxygen deprivation situation because of the snoring. So then that started getting me interested in oximeters. And so there's one, there's several on the market. And Sleep as Android allows integration with some of these things. So the one that I picked, is this, this really ugly, like, so this, there's a company called, and I'm not making this up, Happy Electronics, that makes this pulse, oximeter. And it comes with a dongle that you plug in at the end here, and this little blue thing that you put on your wrist doesn't really do anything at all.
So it goes around your wrist.
Yeah, it goes around your wrist.
That's how it's identifying what you're doing.
No. It goes around the wrist to hold the battery and the little and whatever else is in there. This is actually the sensor. There's no sensors on the blue itself.
So why does it have to be around your wrist at all?
I think because the other option is what you have something dangling off the bed or you do anything.
Sure. Well, on your person seems slightly more invasive, but okay.
And to your point, there are some problems with this. Because this is on my finger, you put this on your finger and then this goes on your wrist like that. And if I put my hand under the pillow or whatever, you know, that happens.
Sure.
And when that happens, it cuts the connection to the application, and the application is not robust enough to understand that's what has just occurred, and so it wipes out your data for the night for this thing. But when it does record, the results are kind of interesting. You've got there's a measure of oxygen intake that is rated between 0 and 100, and you're supposed to be in 90 to 100 that percentile when you're sleeping, and I clearly dip below. So one of the things this does do, even if you're not on Sleep as Android, is it will beep or vibrate to wake you up if you drop below 90, so that you can get back to the point. And it's had some effect, I have to say. Like
it's kind of the digital version of nudging someone when they stop breathing.
Yeah, that's exactly. And I've seen some very
roll over.
I've seen some very complicated versions of these things where there's one I just came across it the other night, and I apologize, I don't have the name of the company, but essentially there's a vibratory strip that you put in your pillow, and then there is a box there, to your point, that you put on the side of the bed, and the cable runs from the pillow to the thing on the side of the bed, and it vibrates the pillow to do that nudge thing to wake you up.
It's funny, Rob, you mentioned, you know, Fitbit at the, you know, beginning of the segment, and I'm wearing a Versa 2. I wear it at night. I mean, this thing is on me unless I'm in the shower. It's on me all the time. And in the morning, I'm always sort of like, how did I sleep? The thing is, though, is like, and there are a lot of metrics going into what it decides, you know, how I slept, you know, this was your REM, this was your deep, this was, you know, sort of your restless period, but it is not accurate.
No,
there will be a night where I'm like, I slept like garbage. You know, I was like, you know, tossing and turning, or Otis was snoring, or the cat was around, you know, like whole thing. And Fitbit would be like, you got 7 hours of sleep. And I'm like, no, I didn't. So you don't know that I was up. So I feel like we're getting to the point where this information is helpful, especially when you're like, I'm trying to pinpoint a problem. But it's not really accurate as far as, because like, how do they know, you know, I'm laying awake, like silently, they think I'm sleeping. I wasn't sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're not moving, it shows that way too. I mean, that's why I stopped using Fitbit, because the inference patterns on Fitbit are immature, I think, compared to something like Sleep is Android. Sleep is Android has, because it's got an open API, it plugs into a lot of things. So it does plug into my Google Fit. It plugs into some exercise apps that I use and a bunch of other things, and they share information back and forth. And it, the inference that it makes, it feels a little better to me. So it'll give me a, it won't give me a sleep rating score. It'll say your deep sleep was 85% of your evening and restless sleep was 15% and that kind of thing. And then it feeds into an overall sleep lag monitor. So it shows you, based off your age and your weight and your exercise levels, how much sleep you should be getting on a nightly basis and how much you are and what's your deficit or how much are you over and all that stuff. So the information is there, but to Sarah's point, not sure it's any better. To find a resolution does not mean that the data is better, but
right. Yeah, it's data that you look at and you go like, all right, there's a problem. What's my solution? we're kind of still working to get to that point. Yeah. Thanks everybody who participates in our subreddit. If you have sleep solutions, please submit them. Submit all stories that you care about that you'd like us to see and vote on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Also join in on our conversation on Discord. It's a lively one. Lots of good friends to meet there. You can join by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS. All right. Chris Christensen, the amateur traveler, has a website that you can use to avoid places that charge resort fees.
Can't hear him yet, but I'm sure he's there.
I don't know if you've had this happen where you check into a hotel that you have prepaid for a hotel room and they say, oh, yes, by the way, there's a resort fee. If you want to use the fitness center, the pool, or even the Wi-Fi, we're going to charge you $40 a day. It has happened to me, as it has happened to many people. There is a bill being proposed in the U.S. Congress that would outlaw it in the U.S. But in the meantime, Expedia, one of the largest online travel agents in the world, has said that all things being equal, they're going to rank lower hotels that have hidden fees. Way to go, Expedia. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
I apologize for interrupting you, Chris, but that's good information.
It definitely is. Shout out to our patrons at our master and our grandmaster levels, including James P. Callison, Wandy Hernandez, and Jonathan Price. Also, extra special thanks to Rob DeMillo for being with us today. Rob, it's been too long.
It has been so nice to have you
on the show. Let folks know where they can keep up with the rest of your work.
You keep up with me. I mean, if you look at my About Me page, About Me, Rob DeMillo, you'll see all my stuff, where to get my Twitter and my Instagram and where I'm working now and what happened to my previous job and all that good stuff.
Well, thank you, Rob. And thank you, everyone, for interest in our upcoming listener co-host episode that we'll be recording for the holiday break. We got so many good submissions. As always, more good submissions than we will be able to fit in the show. So if you hear from us, that means you're on the show. If you don't hear from us, it means you're not. But if we didn't get reach out to you, it's not because your submission wasn't great. We just had too many to pick from. So please, if you don't get on this year's show, send us an email about it again next year. And of course, don't forget, we have holiday cards coming out with Len Peralta art. You got to sign up for our Patreon or stay on our Patreon by November 28th. And if you want to make sure you get a holiday card, you have to give us your mailing address. We can't guess what it is. So go to patreon.com/pledges to make sure that Daily Tech News Show has access to your correct address.
If you have feedback for us, our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. That is 2130 UTC, and you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Patrick Beja. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.